It's Toronto Sportsman Showtime, and this year, we're part of the entertainment. And by we mean the entire Outdoor Journal Radio and Fishing Canada crew. That's right, the entire crew will be in-house, hosting live podcasts with guests, interacting with listeners, and fielding questions from our audience all weekend long, March 14th to the 17th. Tickets are on sale now, and fans of our show are getting 15% off their admission price by purchasing with the link in our bio. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to spend a weekend with us at Canada's premier event for outdoor enthusiasts.
Welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Canada's only specialized pike and muskie shop, Izoco. Head over to izocofishing.com and check out all the amazing hand-picked, top-quality gear they have to offer. This episode is also proudly brought to you by Angling Sports, based in London, Ontario, and serving customers throughout Canada and the northern U.S. With over 30 years of unmatched angler support, they offer top-tier fishing products catering to every skill level. Explore their offerings at anglingsports.ca and gear up for an unparalleled fishing experience. Okay, Frank, this episode is also proudly brought to you by Chaos Tackle, your go-to destination for everything an angler desires. All conveniently available at chaostackle.com. Explore their extensive collection, a selection of high-quality, custom, handmade baits that offer exceptional value, ensuring every fishing enthusiast can gear up without breaking the bank. But that's not all. Unleash the power of their Assault Stick Rods, the first ever designed by muskie anglers for muskie anglers, guaranteeing unmatched success and comfort. Elevate your fishing game with Chaos Tackle, where passion meets precision. Okay, Frank, today we have an angler turned artisan from Cambridge, Ontario. A lifelong passion for muskie fishing to the accidental inception of a thriving bait-making business. His journey is one of dedication and innovation. His soft plastic swim baits, born from a love for the sport, have quietly become the go-to choice for muskie guides and muskie warriors. Of course, he is a muskie angler at heart, along with being a passionate fly fisherman and multi-species angler. So when he's not fishing, he's pouring baits, and when he's not pouring baits, he's probably out fishing. Mr. Landry Smith of Rover Baits, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're pumped. We're pumped to learn today about your skill, your skill set, and how it just happened to accidentally come out of you.
Yeah, that's a true story for sure.
Chris, I'm messing with one of his baits that he brought here today, and I just realized how sharp these hooks are, and he gave me the old... I filed them. We were pantomiming during your intro, and he's filed them down really good. So we got a really interesting bait here. I'm interested to talk about it. I just want to say one thing before we get into it, Chris, if that's okay. I'm really excited to have Chaos Tackle aboard as a sponsor. Great, great company, and just great people in that organization with amazing offerings. So I just wanted to get that out there because this is our first show with Chaos as a sponsor, and Vince and Trevor and the crew there, just top-notch people. So
yeah, totally agree. And we paired with so far three like amazing sponsors. Everything they have to offer is just the service, the quality is top notch.
Yeah. What were you gonna say?
I have a couple Chaos 2020 rods. They are unbelievable. That Revolution reel seat that they have is amazing. I've swapped all my rods to them.
For casting.
They are unbelievable. Yeah. They're so comfortable. You can really pound that hook home in the hook set. It's a great product.
Yeah. I use their trolling rod and I love it. And I just don't have a casting rod from them. So I'm sure I will in short order and I look forward to it. So
Landry, how long did it take you to get used to it? Because you find that like when you, especially with the tranks. You know, it's so hard, especially a 500 tranks. It's so hard to finally figure out how to move your hand around that and get that perfect kind of like positioning on the regular reel set. So I'm just curious, like when you make a transition, was it hard for you to like, did you have to, like at first you're like, screw this, man. And then slowly it grew on you. And now it's just like, you need it.
Yeah. I was a little leery of whether or not I would love it, but honestly, I would say within 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I was absolutely in love with the reel. And the first time I actually used it, because I had the previous 2020s with the regular seat, was this fall when a buddy of mine, Tom Barry, and I got into some pretty good musky numbers. And I tell you, within 10 minutes, I was sold on that thing. You can pound that hook home so well. And it's super comfortable for figure eighting too.
Really?
It's amazing. And the guy got, I used the bigger handle because they have a choice.
Does it have the grip handle?
It's got the grip handle built into the reel seat.
Okay, okay. Like a pistol grip.
And they have different sizes of them. Like they have one that you can turn it into a regular trigger.
Okay.
Or one that's a little shorter stub, but I've been using the really big one that you can put your whole hand on.
Do you still hold this way?
No, I literally hold it like a gun. I hold it like the gun, and it is.
The casting precision is just as good.
Yeah, I mean, like you end up shuffling your hand around a little bit when you cast, anyhow. So yeah. I would just move my hand back in the traditional position for casting, and then grab that handle and use it for the retrieve and the figure eight. It's unbelievable the leverage you can get. And I'm getting a little older, so I find that throwing these big rubber baits, they wear you down. That helps a lot.
Yeah, and if it takes a little pressure off the wrist, like the 500 is a lot of reel as well. And I find my wrist is sore after a day. So if that, I'm going to try that out for sure. I think that's a great must-have for this summer, Frank.
Maybe we'll sure. I would really encourage anyone to get one of those Revolution reel seats up. Chaos, because they are a great combo.
I see them. I see other brands that are switching to that format. I know that I want to say even St. Croix has a model out now. I think I saw it at their booth in Chicago. It's just such a difference, right? Yeah. But
it's hard to wrap your head around.
But you can see it more and more. So that means it's they're onto something, I think.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
What the hell?
So Landry, what happened here? How did your life get turned upside down? In relation to Muskie, because, you know, Frank, I don't know. I'm sure, you know, but like, obviously, you know, but like on Facebook and like, it's almost impossible to get baits from him because he's so busy and everything is just gone. And that means,
Ooh, Landry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forget about it. I just called my first Rover bait literally 5 minutes ago and I met the guy last year. Yeah. Well, they're really in demand because, you know, they work and they work when nothing else is working and they're unique. And so, you know, that's what it's about. It's about getting, okay. So let's open with this question then, because, and then we can talk about how it ruined his life or changed his life or made his life better. But, you know, we always say, Chris, are fish looking for something familiar or something completely different to bite? What makes them strike? It's got to be the latter with you, right? Something different.
Yeah. 100%. Like when I've always been a maker of things, really into art and creating stuff. Like Chris and I were saying, he's talking about fly fishing. I love to fly fish. I've always tied my own flies, built fly rods.
Nice.
It's just in me. So I just started messing around, making some soft plastics for myself. But we all know what it's like when you go to a store, you buy a beautiful bait and you take one cast of it and you know right away it's junk. It's junk.
Right away.
So, I'm really particular about my baits. I didn't actually set out to sell any baits. They just kind of spread amongst my buddies and then from person to person who fish with people. And it kind of turned into this accidental business where I started selling maybe 100 baits a year and then 500 and then as many as I could handle while I was working. So I retired last May, but prior to that, I'd make as many baits as I could without getting divorced. my wife is a patient lady. So I fish a lot. I make a lot of baits. I worked hard when I was back working full time. So it was a juggle, right? You're juggling your kids and everything too. So, and your weekend warrior fishing trips. But, my baits have just kind of evolved. I love a good challenge and I have a bit of OCD to me. So I mean, I really, really analyze what the next step is when I make something. I look.
Well, Landry, what was the accidental inception? Like what was it? Just this desire to create things, and then you stumbled across, like you're looking to mimic a bait fish or something, and that you just gave it a stab and it worked out, or was there some story, yep, like a when, why, and where of how this evolved?
Yeah. So obviously everyone knows about the Shadzilla, Mike Lebulski's Water Wolf product. It's amazing. And I love that swim bait. And I'm a multi-species guys too. So I used to run the Berkeley Hollow Bellies, the original swim baits that they made. And I used to fish swim jigs a lot.
How big were those Berkeleys? Were they big?
Oh, they were just little ones. Just okay. Bass baits.
Yeah. Okay.
And I used to fish swim jigs a lot with a paddle tail kind of jig combo. So I just decided I'm going to try and make a solid paddle tail, because at that time in the musky world, there was nothing other than the Shadzilla that was a swim bait. This is prior to the musky innovations and Chaos product coming
in. Right.
So I made one out of literally plasticine that I stole from my classroom.
From your kid?
poured some plaster Paris around it, melted some old rubber baits, bass baits, and poured a bait. And my original swim bait actually had a built-in wire arm spinner coming out of the top of it. So it was kind of like a spinner bait / swim bait. And as soon as I cast it in my pool, I knew I was in big trouble. It swam great. First time my buddy and I took it out in St. Clair in like mid-October, I bagged a 46 on it in about 25 minutes. I thought that was an amazing creation, but in hindsight, it was hideous. It was very rudimentary, but it ran well. And it kind of opened the door to me trying to bring it to the next level. And there's so much to learn about bait making. In this case, I, up until the last year or so, have been using silicone molds. And so, mold making, my father-in-law is actually a pattern maker, so he helped me a little bit in the journey. And I just kept tweaking and learning about mold making and learning about how big a paddle should be, what angle should be, how thick the tail leading up should be, weighting it and harness making. But literally every single thing in my bait was handmade by me. This year, I'm trying to expand my business a bit more. So I'm now having my harnesses, like the actual wire part, made in China. But prior to that, every single thing was made in my house.
Which limits your output. Absolutely. You only have so much time in a day, and you're a father.
And the wire bending part is not fun. I would never have my product made overseas, but the wire itself is a no-brainer. So now, I can get the wires made for cheaper in China than I can make them for myself.
Yeah.
I pour the lead on them.
And you can't scale. Like, this is the problem of the home bait maker is scaling.
Right.
So you have to be selective in what you're outsourcing. And right. If you can do it right, then you have a chance of scaling properly.
100%. Yeah. So I've outsourced some of the simple internal parts, and I have been spending the winter actually scaling my business up so I can hopefully get more baits in the market. Because up to this point, I've been struggling to do maybe 500 a year. This year, I'm hoping to go a lot bigger.
Cool. Then you can get a Rover bait, actually.
That's right.
Good, because I want to place an order for Unleash the Beast, please. Absolutely. Or even sooner if we see each other.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I want to get some of those thumping paddle tails. But this is a smart thing. Now you have more time. You can look into making this a more in-depth business, right?
Yes.
And what a great side gig to have in retirement.
Oh, it's the best.
It's great.
I mean, aside from the fact that it's a nice little way to keep me busy.
Yeah.
Make a little bit of money to support my fishing addiction. Yep. It's been up until the point of my business starting up, me and my best friend would just, we were on two musky team, right? We didn't really network with people. We just went and fished the Quarthas or
who's your best friend?
G-Bay. Mike Takis. So he's
I've never met him.
He's pretty low key. He's not a social media guy. You haven't met him.
Okay.
You'd love him though.
Okay.
He's a true beauty.
Cool.
But you mean the networking I've been able to do and the people I've met in my business is the best.
Yeah.
And I love getting fish pictures from people that bagged fish on my bait. It's a great feeling to catch something on something you made, but it's also really nice to be part of other people's victories.
It's like the guide who gets more pride out of getting his client to catch or her client to catch the fish than actually catching it themselves. Right.
Absolutely.
That's the
parallel.
Well, look, I mean, you touched on the community, and Chris and I were actually talking yesterday about, you know, the more with every passing day, the ugly pike is a job and a career for us with every passing day. And it's hitting us over the head because we have agendas now. We have things we got to get done. But I said to Chris yesterday, I said, you know, this is going to be great in retirement. If people will put up with us and listen to us for years and years to come, we hope they do. And we certainly are committed to just keeping this, adding to this and keeping our shows great and listening to our listeners who send us feedback. But in retirement, it lets us do something we love and then stay connected to this community, which is just an amazing community. And I've been saying this for years, oh, it's an amazing community, yada, yada. But then you do something like you go to a big outing, like you go to Unleash the Beast or you go to Muskie Brawl or, you know, whatever they're doing over at the Tilted Toque in early season. I know they do something with Lebowski, and you actually get to hang out with these people and meet these people. And it's just a whole different level of like, these are just the best people.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. It's really changed, especially now that I'm retired. Mm-hmm. I tend to do like 2 or 3 day trips to somewhere, stay in a motel or whatever. But
yeah,
I almost have just as much, I would say I have just as much fun just networking and meeting people and going for a couple beers after.
Sure.
You know, it muskie fishing can be a grind sometimes, as you guys know. So it's nice to have, after a tough day in the water, it's nice to be able to connect with people you really enjoy spending time with.
For sure. And we can swap war stories because we were all fishing the same thing. And then, you know, a couple pops later or whatever, it's a lot of smiles and it's a great night.
Frank, it's, just like on your point, it's kind of ironic because muskie fishing, especially if you've never fished for muskie, there's always that barrier that kind of like people think there's an intimidation level or intimidation factor and they're afraid to jump in. And but what we've noticed in all of our guests over the last 5 years, everybody's just so nice. Everybody's so open and welcoming and willing to share any tips or like usually guests are just reach out to me. I can answer your questions. None of that intimidation level is there once you really get to know the people in this community. Everybody just helps each other. So I think, as long as people will keep listening to us, we'll keep trying to bring them good content, great content.
I've only met one asshole in this entire extended community, so that's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah.
So our community's hitting winners. Chris, Landry mentioned beer. Do we want to talk about what I signed this morning? I signed something this morning.
I know you did.
Should we just digress a little bit and just pat ourselves on the back?
It would help if he had one that he could drink with us, but he's.
Well, I think what the product is, we should talk about a little later once everything's finalized. But
sure, go ahead.
We're super stoked because there's a contract right there on the table. We have signed finally our new brewing distribution partnership with we think a really good upstanding company, a brewer in the Niagara region called Newark Brewing, Griffin and Mike, the two guys that own the place. They seem like they're aligned with us and our values and our work ethic and everything we're trying to do. So I don't go into details with the deal. It's a great deal, I think, for us. And so everybody stay tuned because in 4.5 weeks, we'll have a new beer product to market, ready to drink. And I think sooner than that, once Chris and I decide on what this can is going to look like, we're going to unleash the design and what the new beer style is going to be. And I know everyone's going to love it. So big day for us today, Chris.
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to give Landry a little sneak peek here and we can do a little
Landry,
teaser.
As he was mentioning about some of the things we have to do now with this ugly pike, how much workload we have. Well, he just kind of like gave me a deadline without admitting it, like 4 weeks. So that means I have 4 weeks to have everything ready for this
year. Oh, yeah. I mean, we were just talking about this before we started this podcast up. But, man, behind every business that looks simple, behind every job that looks simple,
yeah,
there's a lot more going on behind the scenes.
Oh, my God. Right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So this will either be the new label or the inverse of these colors will be the new label.
I love it. It looks awesome.
That's the product we're going to release because we think that's more in line with our drinkers and our demographic.
Great idea.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for you guys.
Pretty cool.
I'm
happy those are classic fishing colors, right? Oh, fishing lure colors.
That'd be a beautiful hoodie right there.
Well, let's stay tuned because we've got we got a lot going. You know, you're talking about Bait Builders. Ugly Pike will be releasing a muskie and a pike bait as well, customs.
Awesome.
That people will be able to buy from, manufactured by a reputable and just as highly sought after bucktail company as Rover Baits are for plastic. So it's about all we're going to say about that, but we're launching our e-commerce store really quick. And no pressure on the design, Chris. I just think, I think they said four and a half. So it gives you like 3 days.
Get busy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Suffice it, about a month. So yeah. Chances are, if you fish for muskie, you've heard of Chaos Tackle. With Chaos, you no longer have to visit different sites to stock up on all of your angling essentials. You can get it all at chaostackle.com. Unlike other big box retailers, Chaos offers high quality custom offerings, including handmade baits at excellent prices. Chaos lure selection is endless, and when you visit their online store, you're going to see baits that you never knew existed. And us musk anglers know that a unique lure presentation and signature in the water is key to getting inactive, fussy muskies to strike. Their assault stick rods were the first rods designed by musky anglers for the sole purpose of throwing musky lures, and of course, hooking and landing giants. With these rods, your comfort and success on the water is all but assured. Visit chaostackle.com today and gear up for your best season yet.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly,
marinated,
or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
So, moving on, I have this is one of those general questions, Landry, that like, it's like the dumb it down question for maybe people who come to the podcast for the first time and they're just getting into this. If I asked you, how would you answer, what is a swim bait?
Well, swim baits can also be hard body baits. I think most musky people think of a swim bait as a as a paddle-tailed soft bait.
That's what I always thought.
But if you talk to bass guys in the States, there's lots of guys that are making beautiful multi-jointed hard swim baits. They might fish them like a glide bait as well, or or in a steady retrieve. They have that S swimming action. But for me and for musky anglers, it's like a paddle tail swim bait.
And we're
the bass market.
And we're trying to the swim bait's trying to mimic the bait species, right? The forage. It's trying to mimic that Cisco or the shad or the sucker. Like that's absolutely the intent, right?
Yeah. I would say a swim bait is probably one of the most realistic musky baits you can throw and versatile. Most swim baits are, if you look them in the water, they look probably the closest thing to a living fish of any lure you see out there.
Yeah.
Their sound footprint would probably be closest to natural too. I mean, I like everyone, sometimes tend to underestimate how well a musky can see and hear in the water. A paddle tail probably sounds loud in the water to a musky. But I think that they're probably one of the most versatile baits you can throw. I mean, you could just straight up cast it and reel it in. You could rip it like a bulldog. You can count it down. There's just so many things you can do. You can fish in shallow or deep, slow or fast.
So let's look at this thing.
And they catch fish everywhere.
So you brought me this bait. And for the listeners, I'm going to put this on our social media. How I fish this, does it depend on where I'm fishing it, or do you have a method, an optimal method for pulling this?
Yeah, so the bait that Frank's holding.
What's it called?
Do you have a name for it? I'm calling it a T-bone because it's kind of like a T-shaped bait.
Okay.
And I designed it's actually an unweighted pull bait, kind of in that bulldog type family. But
this
a much
is
different
this has been weighted, right?
It's externally weighted. So you can throw weight on the bottom of it.
But so we talked in the doorway. Will this one sink because it has this weight on it?
It'll sink anyhow, but if you didn't have that on.
Okay.
But yeah, you can swap the bait out and fish it super deep.
How deep will this one go down in an average current, an average lake?
I would say weighted, it'll run similar to what a bulldog would run. So,
okay.
So something like that.
Okay.
Or a chaos.
Poseidon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or their pull bait. Sorry, I just all of a sudden lost the name of it. But that's your standard pull bait. I always try to bring something new to the market. I mean, there's no value in bringing the same thing that already exists there. So, and this particular bait I brought today is just something I make for buddies. I may add it to the production lineup, but it's not a swim bait. It's a pull bait.
Right. So the classic Rover is more
of
a classic.
Like my bread and butter is the swim bait. I've got a couple of different designs. I've got my original one, which really thumps hard and has a bit of a wandering action. And then I've got this new one that's kind of a blend between a shad and a Cisco profile.
I saw that one. I saw it in Hamilton.
Yeah. And so that's probably what I would be focusing most of my sales on this year because it seems to have really taken off. And
okay. So your production line is mainly those two baits. And then you have a variation of those based on color, size, like different patterns and stuff, like in terms of the variations of each one of those types.
Yeah. So I've got like a 9.5 and an 11 inch model of my newest bait, which is kind of a shad profile. And that bait can be crept along super, super slow and runs fairly shallow. It's unweighted as well. And then I have my original one, which is a little heavier, runs a little deeper. And, is a little louder, a little bit more erratic, and it wanders a bit if you get a hit the right speed. So I end up with four models then. I got 2 9.5-inch versions and two around 11 to 12-inch. And that's the cornerstone of my product.
Is it possible to talk to as to why the classic Rover thumper tail, why it's different? Like why – without trade secrets, like why are people going crazy about this bait? Like what is it doing differently? If you can say what it is without the trade secret, I'd like you to, what is it? Cause I looked at it. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, okay. And then I started talking to people about it and they're like, you got to get one of those. Yeah. You got to get one of those. And then if anyone who didn't have one was trying to get one of those. And then I met you literally like a day later. So, I mean, what is it about? Uh-oh, someone's calling me. Is it you? Yeah, I declined that one. Sorry.
What's different? What's different about mine? Yeah. So, you know, if you hang around muskie fishing long enough, you'll know that on any particular date.
She's very persistent. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
On any particular day, the Shadzilla might be the ticket, or the Rover, or the Toddy Tickle bait, the Warhammer. So, or Chaos Poseidon. So they fish for some reason, all they must meet in the morning and all collectively decide that they're going to eat a certain color, or a certain bait on a certain day. And you really see that on a fishery like Lake St. Clair. But my baits have this weird wandering action to them. If you give it a little quick crank while you're reeling in, or if you hit that perfect speed, it does not track straight, but it won't roll. So it'll flip up on its side a little bit and then track down again. So it's probably the only swim bait paddle tail that wanders.
Okay.
And when I originally made it, I'm a caster predominantly. So I made it for casting, but then some amazing guides and fishermen who are routinely, you know, banging big fish every year, they started trolling these things. And a lot of the guys are trolling them with hog collars from Johnny Lubowski.
Yeah.
And the whole time they're trolling this bait at, let's say, 2.5 to 5 miles an hour, it's wandering all around back.
So it's acting like a crankbait hunting for center.
It's hunting for center. Yeah. And I think that's
pretty cool.
That's what makes my bait different.
Okay.
But not better. Because it'd be arrogant to say it's better.
Yeah.
All these swim baits I mentioned, they all have their day and they all have their place in your box.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of my bait's calling card, is that wander.
Okay.
And my new bait doesn't have that wander. But I designed that bait to be able to be fished super slow in the fall and not super deep.
Okay.
So it's a totally, anytime I make a bait, I always try and make sure I'm making it for a reason.
Super slow, like just sweeping it slowly or what?
You could, but like the Lake St. Clair, like November swim bait technique is like cast it out and reel it as slow as you can handle reeling it.
Really?
Like,
well, that must be fun catching a fish like that. I mean, smoke them.
You feel the eat really well.
Yeah.
It's torturous. So, I mean, these guys are just creeping it along. And
you don't kill yourself either. Like, that seems like a great way to
It's an easy bait. It's easier to fish. And those St. Clair, like those high riding baits. And that super vanilla plain slow retrieve. And so that's where that bait design kind of was centered around.
Mm, gotcha.
So both my swim baits are very different in their application.
So you wouldn't want to wander on that bait then. You would want to have a straight retrieve and not wander off center for that one.
Yeah. And that one is, it has just your standard kind of belly wobble.
Okay.
And it tracks dead straight. But you know, when you make a paddle tail, a lot of variables, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the angle of the tail, the size of the tail, the thickness in front of the tail, the type of plastisol you use, there's so many variables to consider. And so I was able to take what I learned over the 8 years of making my other baits and apply it. So I was able to make a swim bait that's unweighted, but still won't roll. And that can be burned 100 miles an hour or reeled in as slow as you can reel it, still kicks.
Right.
Cool. So it's kind of like that bait really sums up my
eight-year journey. That sounds like there's a lot of like engineering into that people wouldn't understand, like how much thought you put into that to have a weightless bait that you can retrieve full speed and it doesn't turn over. There has to be like some real mechanics behind, like the engineering behind it has, you know, that must be key for the function of how to keep that from turning over.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure it's like that in any bait design, whether you're designing a bass bait or a musky bait or a hard or a soft one. You know, those hydrodynamics and weighting, and there's a lot to it. But I just really enjoy the problem solving process. And my number one goal is always to make a bait that catches fish and a bait that my customers can use easily as well. If you make a bait too complicated, that doesn't work for everyone either.
Yeah. We love the simple baits. Like I'm no stranger to the Shadzilla, as the listeners know. I like that bait. This is really going to be for me the year of the soft plastic, because I'm excited to throw your baits. Vince over at Chaos sent me a bunch of Poseidons, Chris. So we'll be diving into those when we hit Georgian Bay and Lake Nipissing this summer and wherever else we go. I got some custom painted tubes from Red October. So we are, Chris, when you come here, we are totally ammoed up for some really cool.
That sounds great. I really like what Landry said is that, you know, like it's not about a comparison. It's about what he does to make his baits stand out for the design intent that he has. And that's what he focuses on. So it's not about which bait is better, but every bait has its day, like you said. So like depending on the situation, you know, this one might be better suited, but you have a specific design intent for your retrieve, Landry. And yeah, like, so I'm sure
baits are tools. And I think that the best musky fishermen, they size up. I mean, you got John Pencilon, the guy's amazing. He sizes up the scenario he's faced with and where he thinks the fish are and what the current's like and how deep they are. And he picks the tool.
Right.
And in that, in a Niagara, a lot of times it's a tube. I mean, a tube is
Let's talk about this. You mentioned tubes. So when is a tube? What? Because you said before Chris was mentioning his point was you like using tubes. So when would you use a tube versus one of your maybe a classic Rover, which I think would be the most comparable thing? When would you use a tube instead of that?
So I mean, if I'm in the back of the boat,
okay,
I'll usually be throwing rubber. Mm-hmm. Like if you're up front, you'd be throwing a bucktail, sure. Right? And that's kind of most people's philosophy, but mine. Fish one bait hard and fast, like a fast moving bait, and then mm-hmm. another stop and go bait, or maybe a little more subtle. But I love fishing shallow tubes around weed cover. I think it's a great bait. I like to fish them. I like a tube that turns out sideways
at the weed edge.
Yeah, at
the weed edge. Or over
the top. Or over the top. Yeah. Okay. But if you're fishing like the St. Lawrence or the Kawarthas or somewhere that has really good weed structure,
right.
Tubes are deadly in those spots. They just have that little, they don't move far when you pull it. I personally, I mean, and there's so many different ways to fish it. You can fish them deep. You can hop them. I tend to fish my tubes on shallow. And I like when they turn out sideways. So you get that slight pull forward sideways turn.
Yeah.
I think that just calls fish out of structure, especially in those days where they're maybe not on a bucktail bite as much.
I keep hearing so much about tubes on the St. Lawrence, and I've never thrown a tube on the St. Lawrence. I throw them religiously on the Niagara, but I use the jigs. And so I just got a bunch of like casting tubes. So I'm going to change everything up this year. Absolutely. Although we had a great year on the St. Lawrence last year doing what we do, but you never know when that slump is going to be in front of you and you're going to have to improvise and do things differently. So,
and that's the great thing about musky fishing. There's so much to learn and so many great ideas. You come up with these great ideas in the winter about what you want to do next season. But I've never dragged a tube because I don't fish the Niagara.
Okay.
But I do jig muskies a lot on the Detroit in the fall.
Right.
And after John Pencil's talk at our Muskies Canada chapter, I am definitely going to start dragging some tubes on the Detroit River.
Cool.
I don't think many people are doing that.
Right.
Oh, what time?
So, Chris.
Like, I want to know the time, Toronto, Eastern Standard. What is the time?
You want to know the time, Chris? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
It's the Toronto Sportsman Show time. So,
for
the listeners, we want to mention that, you know, the entire Outdoor Journal Radio podcast network, all the people that do the shows, the Steve Nidzwickis of the world, the Antonio Maleka and Hookset and Top Dog, and of course, two guys named Angelo and Pete, everyone's going to be there. We're going to have a mega booth. We just, Chris, we just finished our designs for the booth. You put an awesome logo together for us. Super stoked. We're going to be hosting podcasts and interacting with people. March 14th to the 17th, tickets are on sale. Hit up the link in our bio for a discount. Go to the Fishing Canada webpage for that same link to get a discount, 15%. And it's going to be a great opportunity to spend time with the people in fishing media that you enjoy. So come out and see us March 14th to the 17th. All right. Got it. What else? Where are we going from here?
Anywhere you want.
Are we done talking about jigging tubes? I think we're done that, right?
Well, no, I mean,
you know,
I wanted to ask.
So a big transition from that, though, is, I mean, when I built my swim baits, I have a different vision of how they're going to fish than maybe a really well-known guide does, right?
Right.
Or someone who has a certain application they're looking for. And one thing I never did was rip swim baits until recently because I started getting so many messages from these musky catching maniacs about ripping these baits. And I think ripping a swim bait is becoming a really effective strategy that a lot of people are using.
I don't rip them, but I rip them.
Yeah.
So I don't rip them when I'm reeling, but I rip them when I pull them.
Yeah. So
and one of my favorite fish I ever fought was on the pause after a big rip. And then I went to rip it again and the rod just went burr. And yeah. I was just like, whoa.
100%.
And that was a lot of fun, that fish.
100%.
So is that what you meant by rip, or are you just...
Yeah, like fish it like a pull pause type thing.
Yeah.
Would not be something... Oh, that's a beauty.
Isn't that a beauty? Look at the birthmark on the fish right there.
Great markings on the side of it too, eh?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful looking fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I lost a really big fish this summer with Mike Nabulsi out east, and I was ripping my bigger bait, my 12-inch bait. Same thing. There was nothing, and then I pulled, and it was heavyweight.
Isn't that great?
It was great till it came off of the net, but it was, but it, you know, that's just musky fishing. Those big ones, their mouths are so hard. And things like that happen. I mean, that's why you have to embrace everything about musky fishing, because it can be very punishing sometimes.
But you talked earlier about if you're in the back of the boat and you're throwing the rubber, and it's kind of like there's this, like you get pigeonholed to being the rubber guy in the back. But what you're touching on is it's such a versatile bait. And you could really do anything with it. So you could almost commit your day to throwing the swim bait. And you can throw it in so many different manners that you can, you know, attack different scenarios. For example, like the ripping, the slow retrieve, the countdown, the jigging. Like there's just so many different options that you can approach with this.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think I already mentioned I fish Lake St. Clair a lot. And 20 years ago, there wasn't many people casting St. Clair. And I'm not making myself out to be a great fisherman. I'm very average, but I love the cast. And 20 years ago, when we'd be casting Lake St. Clair, people would yell at us. Like, they would get annoyed that we were casting. You don't cast here. There was a handful of other guys doing it.
They were all jigging or?
No, trolling.
Trolling, okay.
Even in the summer, guys would be like, what are you doing out here casting? Because it is an empty, wide abyss kind of out there. Yeah. But the numbers of muskies that were in St. Clair 15, 20 years ago were considerably larger than now. We used to have great days, but my whole philosophy on fishing back then was I always start the day burning the bucktail as fast as I could. And if I just didn't have the vibe that they're eating bucktails that day, I'd go to a, like usually a pounder and pull paws a pounder. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much my go-to system. I would kind of use that, work like a charm. And now I do the same sort of thing. I always start out fishing fast.
I was gonna say, it sounds like
right.
The way I do it too. Yeah.
And then if I feel like I need to, or if I'm working a specific piece of structure or like a weed edge, then I might switch to a tube or rip a swim bait. But in the fall, I mean, Lake St. Clair is famous for its swim bait bite. There is probably the Sabeel and a paddle tail swim bait are probably, if you have, that's all you need.
What's a Sabeel?
A Sabeel is this really odd, hard, triple body, double jointed swim bait.
Okay.
Well, I've never heard of this swims before. Like it's kind of like a niche bait. You don't see them anywhere else other than Lake St. Clair.
Gotcha.
That's it's about 9 inches long, super quiet in the water, runs super shallow. It's a super hot bait on St. Clair. That's what most people are throwing, either a paddle tail of some sort, or one of these Sabeels.
Or they're jigging a bondi.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see the bondies jigged in all areas, but in the Detroit River.
Okay.
I mean, the bondie's an amazing adventure. That guy's an incredible fisherman. And now it's everybody knows about the bondie, but when he started doing that, that was really outside of the box thinking.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And I love the jig. I make a variety of jigging baits for myself for muskies too. Mm-hmm. But the jig bait, the jig bite is awesome. If you haven't hooked one jigging, it's something else.
I have, yeah.
It's cool.
It really is cool, yeah.
I'm glad you touched on Bondi there, because his baits are all over the world and they're used for like lake trout and other species. And I think some of your baits are not only for muskie as well, they're being used for lake trout or other species as well. Do you have like a lot of people reaching out to you for salmon or lake trout or in Europe? Do you have anybody reach out to you from Europe for some of the species they have there?
Yeah, like my latest bait, the Cisco Shad profile one, it's really taken off for me. And I'm in the middle of kind of retooling now, but I've got a bunch of orders waiting for some crazy places. Like a lot of Australians have reached out to me.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, Barramundi and Murray Cod.
Yeah.
And then I've had a lot of striper guys from the States reach out. So, yeah, I think my baits are going to branch out a little bit to some saltwater or overseas stuff.
But in Australia know about your baits?
I got really lucky this fall. Like my new bait, I was only able to get 100 baits out there as testers. And okay. I tried to spread them out amongst my regular customers, kind of limiting guys to three apiece. And the bait just took off this fall. It was just crushing the fish on St. Clair. And this social media guy, Decam Fishing, was fishing there, and one of my customers gave him one of my baits.
Oh, he's the Australian guy?
No, but he's a guy from Jersey.
Okay.
So he did a video, got a really nice fish on it. Okay. He's got a huge following. This video's got like over a million views.
Oh,
on
shit.
It.
Okay.
And so I owe this guy a lot. He really spread the word.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, how these Australian and, you know, social media is. It's hard for a guy my age to wrap his head around it.
Right.
But I think that's what's kind of spread the idea of my bait to these places like Australia. But swim baits have always been big in Europe for the pike guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I ask if anybody from like Sweden or Finland reached out to you.
Yeah. So I'm getting all these messages from all over the place right now, which is really interesting.
Nice.
But so I can't wait to get some striper and barramundi photos, not just musky photos. That's the one, yeah.
He says, is this the greatest swim bait ever made?
Yeah.
Watching on this Decam Fishing Instagram, Chris.
Yeah, this guy did a great job on this this video.
Did he catch on this? Is he catching here?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well, he must be hardcore. He's fishing in some pretty shitty weather. Is that St. Clair?
No, this is somewhere in the States. I think this is in Jersey, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
But
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I thought it was a snag. Every great fish starts with, I think I'm snagged, right?
100%.
Cool.
So that was a lucky break I got. It's nice. Timing is everything.
Yeah, right? I guess so.
And I'm proud of the products I make because I take my craft very seriously, as does any bait maker.
Right.
But you know, if your bait's going to take off, you do need a little bit of luck, or you need some people to advocate for you.
Of course.
And it's not easy to spread the word on a great bait among musky guys, because if I have a bait that I'm crushing fish on, I'm not going to just go around and tell everyone about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a funny market to spread the word.
Until it dies down a bit, then you'd be like, okay, now I can talk about it because I'm not crushing every time I'm out. You know, the baits have their peak window, and then once
that's
the decline, yeah. So
you never know.
Do you have a question, Frank, or you want me to?
No. I was going to make a comment about the baits. Like, do you think these baits run in cycles? Like, Chris and I were talking about this the other day, but like Red October baits, like I went to Chicago, I was in their booth, and I never seen, like I've seen a stampede like that once before. It was to go to, what's his name? Sean Hoser, sorry.
Oh,
yeah. But this happened to theirs, and I'm like, what's going on? And they said, well, there's been like a huge resurgence in tubes.
100%.
Everyone is rediscovering tubes. Is that just because people just didn't know, or is this bait catching fish in cycles? Like, what do you think?
I do think there's something to a new hot bait the fish haven't seen before.
But this is not a new hot bait. Right. Do you think people stopped using it? The fish just kind of forgot. New generation of fish are in the water. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, tubes.
Well, in the tube scenario, I don't think many people knew about tubes for muskie. They've been out for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Red October's been, I don't know how long that business has been going for, no less than 15 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
As is Water Wolf. So Mike Nagulsi has a great tube too. So I think they've always been there, but I don't think many people were fishing tubes. I think they've slowly gained traction. Mm-hmm. I think people really underestimated a tube because a tube doesn't look like much in the water.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, you watch a fish, whenever you watch a fishing show, if you see a bass get hooked and they throw the underwater camera, I'm always surprised how little the bass's body is moving while it's fighting. Mm. So I think that actually that like bait fish, they don't actually wiggle and move as much as we think they do.
Okay.
And there's something to be said for the subtleness of a tube. Mm. I think tubes have just taken a long time to gain traction. And I think they're going to keep catching fish, even if everyone's fishing them. They're just such a great and you can use it in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be. It's such a versatile.
Most versatile. Yes, it's one of the most versatile baits.
They're putting flash on the tails. They're putting blades on them. Like, there's a million different configurations, and not to mention the harnesses are all different, right? So you can, I guess they're almost modular, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
100%. So that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool, Chris. All right. What do we do here? Where are we going?
So I noticed, and I don't know, like the color of your bait and the patterns, it's really nice, really detailed. Do you do that yourself? You color them?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna follow with, like, here's a situation. It's like, let's say you've committed to throwing a certain swim bait of yours for a period on the boat, and you're committed and you're in the zone, but you're not having success. And you're not, when I say committed, you're not putting a blade on, you're not putting another type lure on, you're sticking with your swim bait. What is going through your head in terms of what might not be enticing that strike? Would it be a color change? Would you want to go to a new pattern? Would you want to go to a smaller size bait? Or, like, I guess the first question was, how important is color to you? Because when I see your patterns, I see a lot of thought and a lot of attention to detail in how you paint them. So how important do you think that is in selecting the right swim bait for the right area of water you're fishing, the color pattern?
Yeah, like on a lake like Lake St. Clair, color is crucial.
Really?
They really key into certain colors. And this is why these guys that run the, 8 to 12 lines trolling, like the charter
guys, yeah, right,
they're constantly swapping baits and trying to find that hot color for the day. So on a lake like that, color is a big deal. A big deal. And this fall in St. Clair, the hot bait was on just pure white. That seemed to be the ticket in the fall. But in the summer, there'll be more of those subtle St. Clair patterns, like the browns and the greens.
Okay. I remember watching a fishing show. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Charlie Ray. It was an annoying episode because the guy just, like, put 800 lines out, and all he did was drive around. And they ran, after 3-4 questions, they ran out of things to talk about because they really weren't doing much. But I remember he showed his lure selection, and it was all, like, browns, like dark yellow browns. It was like a tray full of them. And he's like, yeah, we just run these.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, in the summer, they run really subtle patterns and a lot of natural and unusual patterns that you wouldn't see on the St. Lawrence or Georgian Bay or Nipissing. Mm-hmm. But I tend to go with the, dark day, dark lure thing. I'll throw a black and orange type on a cloudy day. And I usually throw brighter or more natural colored stuff on a sunny day.
You say that the white color was hot. Are you saying that if I threw a white Medusa or a Rover swim bait or a white Red October, I would have had the same success, or it was a combination of color and a type of lure?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of color and type of lure.
Okay.
Because as I mentioned, in late fall in St. Clair, swim baits and those hard sabils, they bag a lot of fish. But every year there's a different hot color. Now, is it because the fish are on that color? Is that because a few guys had a great day on white and everyone starts to throw white? That's the great question. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that certain colors work really well on certain bodies of water. Black and orange is a great St. Lawrence color, for example.
But isn't black and orange a great color anyway?
I think it's a great color. I mean, if I had to pick two colors, if I was allowed to have only four swim baits,
yeah,
I'd have a white one and the black and orange for sure.
Got a black and orange one right there.
Well, that's a beautiful bait.
Yeah.
Muskie's candy.
You got that just by turning and looking like
nice.
That, eh?
That's nice. I like it.
Yeah.
I love the orange eye on that too.
And I love orange too. And I was, let me see, I'll show Chris this.
Yeah.
And I was sitting.
Show me your shoes.
That's beautiful.
So yeah, I was in Johnny Dadson's shop downtown Niagara Falls.
I heard the story. You talked to us in the podcast.
I
did,
and I just looked at that. I'm like, oh, that's so nice. And he throws it at me, right? So I'm with you, black and orange. Black and orange till the day I die on a lure. What's the other perennial favorite that you've got there?
Well, as far as my best-selling colors, what my customers like, it's black and orange and probably my walleye color.
What do you
It's like a glitter walleye.
You brought me a walleye today. That works everywhere too, walleye.
100%.
Right? Yeah.
Even though
they don't eat walleyes.
I know, it's weird. I like to throw, but maybe they look like a sucker.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, yeah, fair.
Fair I tend enough. To throw like a sucker pattern or a walleye pattern, black and orange, white. I'm not a huge color guy. I'm a kind of shut up and cast kind of fisherman. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to just keep forging ahead.
Right.
But some days the color does matter. I think there's more important variables on most waters. So that might be how deep you want to get it, how fast you want to fish it. Are you the front of the boat or the back of the boat? I think that matters more.
What about that color?
Well, that's pretty, pretty loud.
Am I crazy for buying that lure?
It's out there.
It's crazy.
My buddy would love this.
I don't care. I'm running. I don't give a shit.
My best friend who I fish with all the time, he throws the loudest and ugliest lures you can find. And he often outfishes me. That's pretty, that's the brightest lure I've ever seen.
Yeah. I showed you this.
That's like, that's an acid trip right there.
It is an acid trip. I bought this at in Chicago from Supernatural Big Baits because I just looked at it and I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know. It just spoke to me. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be my personal best. Maybe I run it once and I never run it again. I don't know. But on a bright day, I'm going to put that on. See what happens.
I think you're probably going to get ripped when you pull that out of the box to put it on.
Yeah, probably.
By whoever you're with. And then you'll probably bag one 10 minutes later.
Well, you know, look at the tinsel. Like if you look in any devout blade thrower's box, it's a freaking Christmas tree of green and blue and red. And it's the same shit. Yeah. I mean, it's colored tinsel. We're throwing colored tinsel at muskies. So to throw this thing, is it really ludicrous to throw this thing as well? I don't think so.
The first time when the double tens first came out, the cowgirls,
right.
I got one, like the first year's released. And the first time I threw it, my buddy and I, we just killed ourselves laughing. We couldn't believe it.
Really?
Because at that time, that was like an absolutely ludicrously big bait.
Yeah.
Baits have gotten progressively bigger over the last 15 years, but the bulge it was throwing as I waked it in and the tinsel, I'm like, who could possibly, like, how can this actually catch muskie?
Right. Yeah.
But that thing got shredded pretty hard.
I bet it did. So, and the rest is history.
Before they'd seen those double tens, couple of years, wow, those things were.
Well, the blade is the most successful bait, right? Like at the end of the day, that's the highest number bait.
I think so. Probably that, and the bulldog may have more fish than.
You think so?
I don't know. I think you'd be hard pressed to find two more successful musky baits.
Who told us that the double 10 was the single biggest producer? Yeah, was it John Anderson?
Somebody was telling us the stats on that, and obviously that's probably a product of more people throw it than the other baits, but certainly works.
Yeah, certainly does, especially ugly pike. Bucktails to be released soon.
Nice.
Super excited about that. Yeah, we're not going to go crazy. You know, we know it's a crowded space and all that stuff, but we want to give our listeners the option of a finely handcrafted bait that is Ugly Pike endorsed and exclusive to Ugly Pike. So
I think I know who you're working with on that.
I'm
sure it'll be unbelievable.
I think everybody can probably figure it out. It's going to be a great piece. So really excited. We have meetings Friday and Saturday on the project. So
sweet.
Yeah, it'd be really cool.
Landry, I wanted to go back because when I asked you the question about like if you're committed to the swim bait, and then at the end of all of that, I guess your point was that color is not the most important variable. So if you were still committed to that swim bait, what alterations or variations in your technique would be the most valuable to you? Like, would it be the way you retrieve it? Would it be the depth? Well, like, what would be some of the first adjustments you would make that you find are like can trigger success for you?
Yeah, I think actually I would probably focus more on the speed of my retrieve, the depth of my retrieve. I might go to more of a stop, like pull pause type retrieve before I would swap that bait out.
Yeah, so you would give an honest effort before you just rip it off the line and put something else on, right?
I try really hard not to be a bait changer. I find the days that I'm the worst fisherman are the days I'm swapping baits too much. You know, that gets in your head. That's the worst. That's when I know I got to settle down and just start, you know, shut up and cast. You get desperate. You got that huge pile of baits beside your feet.
We've all been there.
100%.
I just think there's two types of anglers. There's the bait changer and there's not the bait changer. And I'm not the bait changer. I'm well known in my circle from when we hit the St. Lawrence in the fall. Like I bring three baits in the boat and I'm pretty much running one or two. And that third one is if something happens.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of success.
You also know,
particularly one of them.
You also know what you're doing with that bait.
Yeah.
I think if you know the dive curve and or you know how to work that bait, you've got confidence in it, bag fish on it.
I do.
It's so weird. Anyone who doesn't fish thinks this is the dumbest comment, but having confidence while fishing is so important.
It's so important.
Not just for your mental state, but it actually makes you catch more fish. That's an inexplainable, but
I don't think it's inexplainable. It's, I think when I'm throwing my favorite bucktail, I am working it with enthusiasm because I know that my efforts are going to produce.
Yeah.
And when I have something on that's unproven or I just don't feel good about it, just the whole time you're like thinking about, should I be changing my bait? I think that's got to matter. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's got to matter. It's got to matter with the amount of effort you put into your presentation and how much you're, you know, whatever it is that the bait is that you're working. But I know it sounds weird, and it might sound weird to other anglers. I think a lot of musky anglers get it, though.
You know what really blows your mind is when you're in a, you're changing baits, and then you're just like, screw it, I'll go back to the bait that I had success on like the last time, and you throw it on, and like 2 seconds later, you catch a fish. You're like, what? Like, how does this make any sense? So I guess I should never throw anything else ever. You know, like,
I hear you.
Like that's how it messes with you. And it's been, I've had that situation before.
Well, you did it on Nipissing season 4 last, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Yeah. You put on the old Black and Smoke and boom, it produced the old Eagle Lake special.
And yeah. It's a mind F figuring out what to put on your line. But I think you guys are right. Like if you have confidence, then just stick with it and you get in that rhythm, that pocket and everything seems to feel right. And I think that's when things happen for you, for us.
Yeah. There are times when you get that hot bait though on a certain day, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But musky fishing is a team event. And like, if you guys bag a fish in my boat, I'm just as happy.
Yeah.
And so I tend to like my buddies and I, we'll swap baits back and forth. This fall, I had a great day after struggling all season. And we just ended up, Tommy and I just ended up swapping the deadly bait back and forth.
Right.
There's nothing better than driving home and you both bag fish.
Yeah.
It that literally doesn't often
never
happen.
Happens with Chris and I. Wherever we go, one guy catches
all the fish. Well, no, we've had like you've caught, but usually one guy tends to have like the majority.
Where?
What?
Maybe Lac Seul, that was it, where we both kind of had good times, but both of your biggest fish on Lac Seul dominated both of those trips, I would say, because they were such epic fishes. And on Eagle, you always crushed me. On Nipissing the first year, you got all the fish. And then on Nipissing last year, I got all the fish. I mean, Lake St. Clair, I got nothing. You got a nice fish. I mean, it's just, I don't know what it is. But even we were even bait swapping last year on Nipissing. I hit two fish right away. And I'm like, oh, Chris, take this bait. Take my position in the boat. I go to the other side of the boat. Boom. And I catch fish again on a different bait on Chris's old position. So, I mean, we do that. But, man, for some reason, the fish seem to know how to piss us off.
That happens a lot to me in my boat, too. Same thing. Yeah. Musky fishing humbles you. That's for sure.
It totally does. Yeah.
Maybe that's a confidence thing, Chris. Like, I remember on Eagle, you were lighting them up. You couldn't keep them off your hook. You know, and maybe you were just the way I was on Nipissing last year. It was like, they're coming. I can feel it. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Nobody could give you a definitive answer if that's like there's science behind that. But it makes sense because I was totally out of the game. I felt pressure to put a fish on my line. It just wasn't feeling right. I was changing baits. Like all the signs of, it wasn't like I didn't have confidence, but I know I can catch a fish. But it just wasn't working. I don't know. Like, and I think that, as Landry said, that's just the way musky fishing goes. Like, you can't go out and have success every time you fish, unless you're, you know, one of the experts that I'm not. So, I'm trying to get there, but
I've been with time experts.
On water, right? Time on the water. That's the
reality. Is that even the greatest musky fishermen have days where they go 6 days in a row and don't get anything?
Yeah.
But they've got the confidence and the determination to stick with it.
Yeah.
And I think some days it is luck. And then some days it's something subtle, might be the littlest thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sometimes just watching what your buddy's doing, you notice he's reeling a little slower.
Yeah.
That can make all the difference.
You can hear the different reels working in the
boat. Oh, 100%. Last fall, I was fishing predominantly with one reel. And I got a vicious bird's nest.
Oh.
Put it down, picked up my other rod, started fishing it. And I just knew, I don't think I can match the speed that these fish are eating at. So I sat down for 20 minutes, cut a line out, put all new braid on it. For me on that particular day, I felt like I'm not messing with a good thing here. I got this real speed, real handle speed figured out.
Right.
And these fish are eating. So sometimes a little thing like that, just changing a reel could change everything.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
Yeah.
And then some people just have the knack for catching fish or big fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people just have that gift. It's like a weird thing that you came and figure out why. Some people just have that it factor.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right? Not saying that they're not great, but then they have that something special about them. You know, that just seems to dial up giants.
Yeah, it's annoying. I know people.
We try to like these people, but it's hard.
Yeah. I got to throw one of them around yesterday on my wrestling mat. Nice. So I got my frustrations out a little bit. We went to my gym and did some stuff. But I want to ask about can I ask a question, Chris, about
sure.
certain style of fishing? Or, so one thing that really kind of caught my attention was when you and I were fishing with Ryan Pickering, who's coming here tomorrow. Him and Pete Robertson are coming tomorrow. If you want to sleep over, you can sit down on that one too. So he's coming tomorrow. We're gonna talk about the Odyssey and that'll be released the second half of March for the listeners. But so many great things happening with the Odyssey, but one thing I really realized was the deep water targeting in that boat was I've never seen anything like it. And we weren't successful, but that was a really tough few days for all the anglers mm-hmm. on that body of water. And so, you know, given the baits you make, like we're talking deep, like we were like in 60 feet of water.
Mm.
Is that something you do or is that something you do when you're with him?
Yeah. Typically when I fish with Pickering, like we fished a fair bit together, not a ton, but he's a great guy. I would say that day we fished a little farther off structure than we typically do, probably because there's three of us. Mm-hmm. And I think he wanted to give me as the third guy in the boat some options as well.
Okay.
I think on some lakes, you need to be tight in the structure. And, you know, and some bites, the fish are just way shallower than you'd expect them to be. But I do have lakes like a couple of halibut lakes I fish, and they're like, really like shield lakes deep.
Okay.
And the fish that I catch on these spots, they tend to move up on like, so 1 week they'll be up on the structure. Next week they'll be suspended out.
Right.
So I have a couple spots where I literally run my boat so I can bomb a cast in right on the structure. And then I'll cast out open water. So I'll do a one in one out on a couple of these spots. And I have caught a surprising number of fish on a full length cast out from
the Canadian structure. Side of the boat.
So I think there is some merit to it. I've also caught some open water.
Why are they moving out? Like usually on some of the bigger lakes, they move out because they're chasing the mayfly hatches or something like that, right? So why would some of them be on shallow structure and others be on deep structure at the same time of year? I don't get that.
Yeah.
Is it just the way the fish are?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it happens more on lake trout style lakes, like shield lakes, the deep rocky ones.
Okay.
But you know, I don't have the body of experience that
we're talking about Lake Nipissing. So yeah.
I think there's some fish that live in open water and feed on ciscos all year long, and that's all they do.
And probably then there's some that live in the weeds all year.
Yes, I do. But I also think there's fish that will move it up onto structure, then pull off. They're still structure related.
Okay.
And so if you've caught a big, let's say you caught a 48-inch fish off a rock pile on a point in Georgian Bay, I think he'll be back on that rock pile from time to time. But I also think that he could be suspended out, you know, 300 feet from the rock pile, but maybe still only 6 feet down. Hmm. If you watch I'm just a fishing show and fishing information junkie.
So, yeah, so are we.
I watch a lot of the bass tour stuff too. Cause
oh, not that big of a junkie. Yeah,
so, there's so much in the States. There's so many suspended bass fishing, especially with the new live scope technology.
Right.
It's surprising how many fish just suspend and maybe spend their whole life suspending.
That's crazy.
I don't know if there's a right answer to that.
I mean, I think early season when I think suspended muskie, that's what I don't know for right or for wrong, but again, that hatching cycle, right, is when they tend to be out chasing those hatching moments, and then when the summer settles in, they move closer to the structure. But like you say, sometimes fish will just stay out and you just don't know. We caught that fish that you saw and said before we started, when you're like, oh my God, look at that fish. That was the biggest muskie I've ever seen. I think close to it. We caught that in 12 feet of water in December. And we were like, it was like, okay, we're going over a hump, bring the lines up, because we were trolling. We'd bring the lines up to the baits up to like 10 feet because we were in 12 feet of water, right, with just a sandy bottom. And we didn't think anything of it. In fact, my friend Attila didn't put the clicker back on, so we didn't know anything was going on until we heard like a whistling sound. And we're like, what the hell's going on? And then we look, and the line is just peeling out. Like, we had no expectation. We were targeting fish in 18, 19 feet of water. Mm-hmm. And we were catching. And then this was just an accident, and there was just a giant Goliath muskie sitting in 12 feet of water.
Yeah, muskies, they, one of the benefits of having a business and meeting so many people is, mm-hmm. is you learn a lot.
Yeah.
I've met some really great fishermen. You had Greg Jones on a little while ago.
You did?
Didn't you have from Lila Lures?
No.
Oh, I thought
different podcast.
Okay.
I got a bad memory, but it's not that bad.
He's a guy worth having on. So Greg's really humble, but he's...
I saw him at the expo in Chicago. He had a booth.
Right. Yeah.
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 I didn't get to talking to him, though, but I'd like to.
He really opened up my eyes. I don't have a lot of G-Bay experience, although I grew up in Honey Harbor.
You did?
Summers as a kid.
That's ironic. Okay.
But I was the musky fisherman back then, right?
Right.
Just pike and bass. I was just a kid messing around.
Yeah. But
he really knows G-Bay so well, and he really opened up my eyes about where muskies sit in G-Bay. And I think logically, you think big fish won't sit shallow except for certain times of year. But I think big fish in Georgian Bay can sit wherever the hell they want to sit.
Yeah.
He really has that place dialed, and he'd be a person worth having on.
Cool.
He's also an amazing bait baker, and he's one of the nicest guys you've met, but you can meet. But
awesome.
A buddy of mine, Ben Scriver, and I went up and fished out of Ben's boat, and Greg and another one of his friends was fishing for a day up there, and they baked a couple of beauties, and we didn't see anything all day. But he just got that structure so dialed in.
Yeah. Did you see – I don't know, Chris, if you saw it, but did you see Slobland's last
– Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Wasn't that cool?
Wow.
Chris, did you see it?
No.
You got to watch it. So go to Slobland on YouTube. It's their latest video. They don't do a lot, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I've always had these thoughts about these guys are fishing blue water. And I know they do. Middle of nowhere, blah, blah, blah. They're like in front of like someone's cottage.
Yeah, I know.
And he says
I know
that's the best spot ever. And they're
where,
just
where it was.
Yeah, where, yeah. where it was. Yeah. Yeah. And they're just, Chris, the fish they're catching, just throwing whatever they're throwing. Oh, like they're not fishing. They're not fishing any special baits, you know, and just fishing like the rest of us would. And oh my God, these fish. But yeah, that spot must be beat to shit. And if it's not,
I know where
be.
That spot is.
You do,
we fished there, yeah. And I've never caught a fish there, but it's those guys are such good fishermen.
Yeah.
Time in the water once again, right? Yeah. And I'm sure even like, you know, Matt, he's an amazing fisherman.
I fish with Matt at Unleash the Beast. Yeah.
He's unbelievable. But they have their struggles too. But
we struggled. We struggled for 3 days.
Yes.
And then I caught, he caught, and Todd caught all in kind of a moment, right?
Yeah, musky fishing is weird that way. It's like a light switch.
I tell you, man, I was not expecting anything. This is right the last 3-4 hours of the tournament or the outing, I guess I should call it. And I'm just – I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm ripping a bait up. I don't remember what I was throwing even. I think it was a soft plastic, and I was under the boat, and I ripped it up, and I looked at it, and it just stopped right there, and I looked at it, and then straight up out of the depths comes a mouth and just – inhales it, and you know that scares the shit out of you moment, right? Especially after 3 days, like we didn't catch any. Oh, Brian got one that day, but yeah. It was a tiny fish. It was a 38 or something like that. We didn't bump it, but so we were just trying to get through and just, you know, get something. Matt was really stressed. I remember he said to me, I haven't gone 3 days this whole summer, this whole season without a fish, and this was our third day, and sure enough, we hit three fish that afternoon. But it scared the absolute living shit out of me. It's hard to say, like, what kind of strike do you like? Because when we were in Nipissing, I was catching fish like out there, and they were just nailing me, and it was a lot of fun. And we talked earlier about, you know, different ways they hit or on the paws or at the boat side. Like, I don't know. I think I love them all. Maybe the figure eight is my least favorite. I think I'm turning into a salty, musky angler. I think it's my least favorite.
I love the figure eights.
You do, eh?
Lake St. Clair summer casting. Yeah. I tell you, those fish, I would say you'd probably get, in my opinion, 70% of the fish will eat on the eight in the summer fishing.
I'd say eagle and sole are probably the same, eh, Chris?
Maybe more.
If you've been to Lake of the Woods, they figure eight like. They're like trained muskies.
Right.
Yeah, it can be infuriating.
That's hilarious. Very cool. Very cool. All right, Chris. Listen, I got to take some time out, if you don't mind, to talk about what is going on in Toronto on March 14th to 17th. Everybody, come to the Toronto Sportsman Show, the Outdoor Journal Radio podcast team. Everybody, Steve Nidzwicki, Ange, Pete, the crew from Eatin' Wild, Jerry from the Mushroom Show, Under the Canopy, all the other shows that are on the network. Everyone's going to be there broadcasting, shooting the breeze with fans and listeners. Head over to the link in our social media for a 15% off ticket to that. Go to the Fish and Canada website as well. You can get that. And it's going to be an amazing time. I don't think Anderson's Lodge is going to be there, but they probably should, because they should spread the news about what a great lodge they are. Chris, as you know, I caught my first muskie at Anderson's Lodge. It was my gateway muskie to the life I'm living now. It was a giant mid-50s beast that I caught almost by accident on a topwater doing a figure eight. Can you imagine? Like, when do you ever do that on purpose? Like, now that I look back at that, right? So no map, no muskie knowledge, maybe 2-3 weeks of watching the muskie hunter. Went up there in a tin can with my buddy, no guide. I think we got dropped off by an airplane, Tuck Bay Outpost, and we got two fish. One was an absolute Goliath and scared the shit out of us, but really, really started me on this journey. Guys, they're in Sioux Lookout. They've got a drive-to location. It's easy access. So if you're looking for a simple trip up there and, you know, spend a little time hiking up there, you can drive right to it, stay in the main lodge, Great American Plans, or you can get on a plane and they'll fly you to an outpost where you just get the most amazing remote experience. Beautiful cottages, 9 area lakes, and tons of species you can target. You know, everything from pike and muskie. It's a smallmouth bass and lake trout and walleye and all that stuff. So reading off the list of species would be a good place to bring your rover baits. And, of course, they're very flexible with your in and out departure days and times and all that stuff. So insane customer service. I loved it up there. And, Chris, I hope to God we can
great
go
bait
back
shop
to-
too, you should mention.
Great bait shop as well that has caught one of Chris has allowed us to stock one of Chris's all-star baits. That in record time netted a 48-inch fish on Lac Seul for us, if I'm not mistaken.
Big mama, yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. That was a great trip, and that was a great start to that trip. That was an epic trip, man. I miss it. Ben, if you're listening, we're coming back. We just don't know when. Fuck. It's just there's so much. Like, I have so many trips booked this year already, and I know I can't do them all. Like, I know I'm going to disappoint somebody, so I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Every time someone's like, come up. And I'm like, yeah, I'm coming. So I don't know what I'm going to do, Chris. We've got to figure out what we're going to do. Cause if we're going into Sunset Country, we've got to arrange that. And if we're not, we're going to still have an amazing year. As long as Nico invites us up, we'll fish Nipissing. Pete Bosselman has put an invite for us to go up to Georgian Bay and fish with him, and come hell or high water. Oh my God.
Absolutely. Do that.
Did you listen to his episode? Ugly Pike?
No.
You should listen to it.
Okay.
It is so great. It is just, you know, Pete's very enthusiastic. It's a fun discussion, but the knowledge he dropped, man, I put that episode in probably in our top three. It might even be up at number one. Like, nice. It was such a great episode. I don't know how you feel, Chris, but I think you feel the same.
Yeah, he was just a monster of just tactics and just opened our eyes to a lot of stuff. So learned a lot from him.
Yeah, and you know what? If we go up again, we'll come off the water. We'll flip the power switch on the microphone, and we'll do a second series with him for sure, because that would be very cool, sitting all in one room and, you know, cracking a few new cold ones of the new Ugly Pike beer line that we'll talk about soon. But it's going to be a great season for us, Chris. So hopefully you don't get all the fish this year, and hopefully I don't get all the fish this year.
I just want one. I'm not greedy. Just get me one.
Just one giant.
One 55-inch fish, and I'm happy.
F-
Folks, thanks for listening. That was part one, Landry Smith. What a great guy, and such great news to know that finally his baits will be available to the public. Super exciting. Part two is going to drop a week from now, so make sure you guys are listening and looking out for that. And we're happy to bring that to you. More great talk with Landry about fishing methods and all sorts of things, guaranteed to help you guys up your game. So thanks for listening. Until then, if you are a bait maker, a bait builder, you own a giant fishing company, anything in the fishing or fishing supported industries, please reach out to us for our sponsorship deck. We have such an amazing deal for anybody who is big budget or low budget. Doesn't matter how big or small your operation is. We have different a la carte options that are going to pay big dividends for you as a sponsor. And so just reach out social media or through our website and ask for our deck. We're happy to send that to you. Remember, it's one ad spend that lives in perpetuity in our catalog. What that means is you pay once, and you know, we're always getting new listeners from the Fishing Canada TV show coming in and downloading our catalog, and they're going to see your ad in perpetuity. We also have exposure for our show on the Fishing Canada TV show, as we have sponsored the Getting There segment. So these are 3.5 million fishing eyeballs on our product, on your product every Saturday morning. There's nothing like this. And as you can tell, we're adding sponsors quickly, and eventually these spots are going to fill out. So reach out if you're interested before it's too late, and we'll get you all the information you need. Please leave a message or rather a review on any podcast app you're using to listen to our show. We would really appreciate that. Helps us, and tell everybody what you think. Until then, stay tuned for part two, Landry Smith. Thanks for listening.
Did a small-town sheet metal mechanic come to build one of Canada's most iconic fishing lodges? I'm your host, Steve Nidzwicki, and you'll find out about that and a whole lot more on the Outdoor Journal Radio Network's newest podcast, Diaries of a Lodge Owner. But this podcast will be more than that. Every week on Diaries of a Lodge Owner, I'm going to introduce you to a ton of great people, share their stories of our trials, tribulations, and inspirations. Learn and have plenty of laughs along the way.
Meanwhile, we're sitting there bobbing along, trying to figure out how to catch a bass. And we both decided one day we were going to be on television doing a fishing show.
My hands get sore a little bit when I'm reeling in all those bass in the summertime, but that's might be for more fishing than it was punching.
You so confidently you said, "Hey, Pat, have you ever eaten a drum?"
Find Diaries of a Lodge Owner now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories. No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.